Every January, A-List Hollywood practically shuts down to devote itself to daily film awards parties and a number of industry and critics group ceremonies. The movie awards season kicks off in earnest each year with the Critics' Choice Movie Awards and concludes with the Academy Awards in late February. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. I've just returned from the 18th annual Critics' Choice Movie Awards, and I'm delighted to have fellow Broadcast Film Critics Association member Cynthia Haynes on the program again to discuss the Critics' Choice Movie Awards and the awards madness currently sweeping Hollywood. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning, Chuck. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great to hear your voice on the radio again.
On a cell phone all the way from Lawrence, Kansas, but my heart's still in El Paso.
That's right, and longtime listeners will remember your voice and name from this program. You were the former host and creator of this show, so it's nice to catch up with you every year in Hollywood, and this year was another big year for us at the Critics' Choice Movie Awards. It seems that the awards season is getting more and more compressed. I know the Oscars have moved their announcements forward. They coincided with our own awards show, and the Golden Globes were just moved up about a week. And the Oscars are now in late February instead of March, so pretty soon we'll be giving awards maybe at Christmas.
Who knows? And I think a lot of Academy members are rather frustrated by the short window that they have. And I've mentioned this on the program before, working professionals really don't have a chance to watch 200 screeners that they might be getting in the mail. And the value of these shows, like the Critics' Choice Awards and the Golden Globes, is to bring certain films to the attention of the working professionals and Academy members so that they say, well, gosh, I'm hearing a lot about this, you know, Zero Dark Thirty. I'm hearing a lot about The Master. I'm hearing a lot about this. I guess these are the screeners I ought to be watching. And as you and I well know, if your studio or your distributor doesn't get behind you and send out a screener, your odds are virtually nil that you're going to win anything or even be discussed during award season.
Right, which is why every year I'm a little disappointed that all of the early critics groups, including our own, don't have broader categories of films. It still typically is the studio films. Occasionally an indie film will slip into the Best Picture list or somewhere else down the line in nominations. But I agree totally with you that these early shows tend to have a editing effect on what the front runners are going and where all the attention will be. But this year was kind of interesting because we both experienced an enormous onslaught of publicity and swag and things sent to us for Lincoln, which I would have given you great odds was going to be the shoe-in for Best Picture. And the room just erupted when Argo won for Best Director over Spielberg and Best Film over Lincoln, as well as all the other great nominees.
Well, Ben Affleck didn't seem very happy at the beginning of the show, and I think he was still wounded from being snubbed by the Academy.
Right.
But he sure lit up when they announced, you know, he won the award for Best Director, and that also that Argo won. There's a consideration. I'm predicting that Lincoln will do well during the Oscars. The average age of an Academy member is 58. The median age is 62. And I think Argo wasn't that edgy. I mean, it didn't say all that much about American foreign policy, but it was a well-told story. You know, it was almost a throwback to the good old dramatic film with a lot of tension. I saw it twice, and it did hold up the second time around.
And it has comedy and suspense and a lot of elements to it.
Yeah, right. But I do think a more serious film like Lincoln will probably be winning the awards during the Oscars.
One of the hallmarks of this year, I think, I don't know if you would agree, is that there are a number of very good films all kind of on an equal playing field. And I think you talk about median ages and average ages. And, you know, I would also think about the math of the voting, which when you have a year like this where you have four or five films, all of which I think are contention for Best Picture and even odds, it splits the vote in a way that you can get some interesting results like Argo, which I think before our show, nobody would have picked as a Best Picture. And yet, I was just a few feet from that table when they announced him for Best Director, and they no sooner had said Ben that the entire place just went crazy.
I agree with Joaquin Phoenix in some interviews that he did a couple of weeks ago. I mean, he just was kind of incensed that he was in a horse race with other great actors. And
right.
And I personally feel like it's honor enough to be nominated, as much of a cliche as that is. You know, how can you say one performance is better than another? I also feel like the category of best picture ought to be, and acting ought to be, broken up between drama and then musical or comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's apples and oranges. It's just really not fair to the other films. Although, again, this is all about marketing, you know, prior to the nominations and afterwards. It's about selling movies.
And obviously, you can't pick up the New York Times and see those full-page ads without seeing the lists of nominated for 13 Critics' Choice Movie Awards or 8 Golden Globes or so many Oscar nominations. So there is a tacit tie-in with the industry at large. However, I would hope that a critics group like our own is somewhat independent of all of that. You mentioned the different split up of awards, and one of the things that we do is have music, comedy. We have a science fiction and horror, and the Golden Globes have some of those things. And I think that allowed this year, we had big wins for Silver Linings Playbook in the best acting ensemble, best comedy, I think best actor and actress in a comedy, all swept by Silver Linings Playbook, which is also nominated for a best picture.
Although I question whether or not it really is a comedy.
I mean, there were
some funny lines,
right.
But, you know,
right.
It's dealing with a pretty serious subject, and the director of the film, you know, made that point, that he made this film for his son, who has, I guess, mental and emotional issues that he's contending with. And anyway, I thought Jackie Weaver and Robert De Niro were in one movie and that Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper were in another film. And I just know it was very trite in many respects. And I just don't think Cooper's that good of an actor. I think Jennifer Lawrence was the best thing about that movie. I think she did a very good job, and I think she has a terrific future ahead of her, although she, I think, is off on the wrong foot about refusing to have her picture taken with anyone. When people like De Niro were so gracious and Daniel Day-Lewis. So I think Jennifer played the game, so I thought that was a little strange. But
I think best actor was kind of the obvious Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln. It's a performance that floats above so many, Phoenix again. And I think Daniel Day-Lewis acknowledged, as did a lot of people this year, I was really interested in the number of people who played down their award to honor the other nominees. And Daniel Day-Lewis was certainly one of those, speaking about his amazing colleagues, which included, you know, people like John Hawkes for The Sessions and Hugh Jackman for Les Mis and Joaquin Phoenix in The Master and Denzel Washington in Flight, which incredible performance. It's really hard to choose between that list. Best actress went to Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty. Nice, since nothing else won for Zero Dark Thirty, I think, except for editing.
I thought it was kind of interesting that she quoted Brecht, I believe, when she accepted her award, and she said, "Unhappy the land in need of heroes."
Right.
I thought that was a rather profound comment on what that film was all about, although Catherine Bigelow kept saying, you know, it's not a political film, this is about this one particular incident, but it sure has raised the hackles of a lot of people and the implication. And this line, Chuck, between documentaries and dramas continues to blur. And
right.
Zero Dark Thirty and Argo are not documentaries. And to take just about anything as truth and fact is questionable in this day and age, I think.
Zero Dark Thirty has a similar issue, I think, as The Social Network, where you're making a film about such recent history that's still very much in the minds of people, and it makes, you know, puts people on different sides of the fence. Whereas Argo, maybe that is the reason for the surge in Argo, is that there's enough distance there that we can enjoy Argo as a suspense film, as a film about the clandestine and domestic services.
Oh, it's ancient history to a whole generation that's out there. They don't remember this at all, but I remember watching Ted Koppel and Nightline and, you know, following this drama for quite a long time.
So one of the amazing things is that we are in a room having dinner around round tables while the show is going on with some of the greatest filmmakers and actors and actresses and editors and composers in the world. And you got to meet a lot of people. Your favorite moments for the evening?
Chuck, it is mind-boggling to stand there and look around that room and think about the extraordinary talent and the amount of pleasure that people have brought to audiences because of their talent. And Daniel Day-Lewis was just absolutely charming and a thrill to meet him. I was in the room when he won several years back and didn't get to visit with him. I chatted with him a bit, and he is so kind and gentle.
Yeah, I went for John Williams immediately, which growing up a kid and having so many of his soundtracks on tape back then, it was just a great honor to get to speak with him about composing and the incredible legacy he has. We both got to speak with John Hawkes, which is a consummate performer. He was in the Sessions, nominated for the Sessions last year. Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, the year before, Winter's Bone.
He also spent some time in Lawrence, Kansas, making a film entitled Earthworks about a crop artist named Stan Hurd who lives here. So I'd heard about him way back when, but he's busy, right? He's working on an Elmore Leonard film right now and another one, and we met him last year, and he kind of smiled about all the attention because he's been knocking around Los Angeles for a very, very long time. And again, an overnight success. He certainly has. And I told him he deserves all the success that comes his way. He really does.
Well, the nice thing about this time of year is before awards fatigue sets in, that many of the films we've been discussing and that have been winning awards are either still in theaters or they're coming to home video very soon. So listeners can watch a lot of these best films in a condensed period of time and have their own little mini film festival of 2012.
So often, though, and I think there are fewer and fewer people watching these award shows, the main reason being a lot of these films either hadn't been released yet nationally or have recently been released, and so few people have had a chance to see them. And I think the opening monologue, Amy Poehler and
Tina Fey at the Golden Globes.
Tina Fey, yeah, made a crack, you know, honoring films that opened 2 days ago. I read a statistic that, in fact, more people have watched one episode of Mad Men than have seen the film The Master. And I think, you know, there are a lot of smart, small, low-budget films like that that are really extraordinary, that are worth making an effort to see once they go to video and or a DVD, and I think they will very quickly. But that's one of them I highly, highly recommend.
Yeah, I think The Master was high on both of our lists, and it will be coming to Blu-ray and DVD in February.
And Moonrise Kingdom, another one that is out on DVD right now, so that's really worth watching. It's a great family film and very entertaining, very, very sweet.
Truly a movable feast that you can enjoy in your living room now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as interesting as it is to attend these big televised award shows in person, my favorite time is always hanging out with you and our fellow critics after the show for our after party. And it's always great to see you. And thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're very welcome, Chuck. Thanks for having me on the show.
My guest today has been Broadcast Film Critic Association member and former host of this program, Cynthia Haynes. Ms. Haynes and I just returned from the 18th Annual Critics' Choice Movie Awards in Los Angeles, where we spent a long evening with some of the finest filmmakers in the business. For a complete list of Critics' Choice Movie Awards nominees, winners, and photos from the show, log on to CriticsChoice.com. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.